This is your moment. Your moment to move forward and make progress. It's time to see where an education can take you. For over 130 years, Strayer University has been at the forefront of change, offering programs that help students like you get ahead and stay ahead, so you can keep striving. Visit strayer.edu to learn more. Strayer University is certified to operate in Virginia by CHEV.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
This week's Talking Simpsons is brought to you by Audible. And Talking Simpsons listeners can go to audibletrial.com/lasertime and get started with a free audiobook and a free month of Audible.
I heartily endorse this event or product.
Ahoy, ahoy, everybody, and welcome to Talking Simpsons, where whiskey counts as beer. This is the Laser Time Podcast Network's chronological exploration of The Simpsons. I am your host, Bob Braindead Slob Mackey. Who else is here with me today?
I've sold monorails to Brockway, Ogdenville, and North Haverbrook.
Is there a chance the truck could bend?
I call the big one Peggy.
I think I played that at the wrong point in time.
There are several heads floating around me right now, wasting time.
Recently outed Chris Antista.
Whoa. And, congratulations, and, very brave.
And I'm Henry Gilbert, and I come from someplace far away.
And today's episode is The Immortal Marge versus the Monorail, which aired on January 13th, 1993, the first 93 episode of The Simpsons. And Chris will help tell us what happened on this mythical day in history.
Damn it, Bobby, your mind's going to get blown, because Disneyland opens Toontown, USA, based in the image of Who Framed Roger Rabbit, in this announcer's opinion, the greatest movie of all time. To date this even further, CBS announces David Letterman will go up against NBC's Jay Leno in his Tonight Show.
Wow.
And yes, to date this even further, Fern Gully comes out on VHS, but it can't top Aladdin at the U.S. box office.
Thank God.
Oh my God, my name is Betty.
We didn't know how good we had it when Robin Williams was playing every wacky character for like 20 years. We didn't know we'd lose that.
And
Betty,
also,
Betty.
They're both off TV now, Leno and Letterman, but we've reached the end of the Late Shift film, which is really, I love that HBO.
It's
I've
really
watched
good.
It a million times.
Like
on
David
Comedy
Michael
Central.
Higgins, the guy's in the Mascots movie with Harry Shearer. he's playing a Letterman. But that's, I want to emphasize, when nerds talk about this is not the glory years, like the glory years have had glory years to become glory years.
Mm-hmm.
Because David Letterman is like the longest serving talk show host after Johnny Carson.
Yeah.
In this period, he's introduced in the middle of the Simpsons run and retires in the middle of the Simpsons run.
Mm.
That's how long the Simpsons have been on the air.
Yeah.
You're right. His CBS show. Man, that's incredible.
Just trying to emphasize that.
Well, in 30 short years.
And that so many Simpsons writers have went through the David Letterman.
And who replaced Letterman?
Colbert's.
No. sorry.
Conan O'Brien!
Conan O'Brien!
That's right. And this episode is immortal and beloved, but I do believe it is The Simpsons setting foot in Wacky Town with Captain Wacky, later renamed Homer. And and I feel like this is them just fully embracing the Wacky. And they were afraid that Jim Brooks would hate the show because they completely...
Is he on the commentary? Rules. He's on the commentary, right?
He is not on this commentary,
okay.
But I feel like for better and for worse, this is The Simpsons embracing what it would eventually become.
Mm-hmm.
Like this off kilter, anything can happen show.
And where they watch TV all the time.
Yes.
And TV has all the answers.
Yes, all the answers.
But this is the second Conan O'Brien written show we've done commentary for.
Right, and I think he pitched this one, though. It's his idea.
As he talks about it on the commentary, he pitched three that day. Lisa's Rival, which would be a season 6 episode long after he left the show.
It's a great episode. I love that one.
Marge gets a job. He pitches those two, sells them. And he's like, you know what? I'm going to try for a third that Al Jean and Mike Reese told him was too crazy and James L. Brooks will never get it. And then he pitches this episode and he sells it. And they're like, wow, this guy's unstoppable.
I love that story of like Conan like having worked at Saturday Night Live during a, let's be honest, a crazy glory period.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And a really good period in SNL, and like, I just need to go somewhere else and do something else. And he moves out to LA. Up until, it feels like recently, but it's not, this is the only time Conan was in LA in his like professional life.
Yeah, yeah.
And to that point, yeah. And then he's in LA. He moved to LA for the Tonight Show and stayed there. Mm-hmm. But this was a big step for him. He wanted to shake up his life. He had been friends with Gina Reese, and they'd known him since he was 19.
Harvard Lampoon.
All those fucking Harvard guys watching out for each other. But
collusion?
Coney.
Friendship. Yeah. Friendship works a lot like collusion.
Same thing.
I mean, the commentary is them just like, again, they love Conan O'Brien so much. All they do on it is talk about how much they love him.
Did you see him, not to bring up the election, but it will, it, the election did color my perception of this episode this one time. It's it stood up for 20 years as great. This one time it colored it, but Conan stood up and said, and he stood up and said, like, we've had many elections. Many people don't know this. I'm a history buff. And he rattled off upsets in history, because you forget that like Conan O'Brien is sort of like the basis of most of the things Mr. Burns says in this season.
Yeah, yeah,
like he loves history so much.
He's a very smart guy.
And he said Harvard said, just for the jokes.
He said, I love his quote, that if he could do anything all day, it's lie in a field and come up with things with Mr. Burns to say, because Conan likes stupid old things that old people, only old people remember that much.
Yeah, well, I really remember all of the old-timey sketches he would have in the early years of his shows. Like, I'll
butter his bread.
I didn't realize how essentially he was at The Simpsons when I was watching those, but thinking back, I really do now.
And he thinks back on his Simpsons legacy quite a lot. Mm-hmm. I have a clip here where he talks about what monorail specifically means to him, where this was him at their Hollywood Bowl show of The Simpsons, and he performs the monorail song live. But first he talks about what the monorail song means to, or what the monorail episode means to him and his legacy.
Simpsons fans don't care. No matter what I do, they come out of a crowd when they see me, they come up. And they go, and I'm like, that's right, Mr. Late Night. And they're like, no, man, monorail. Monorail, man. No matter where I am, my wife will be giving birth. I'm cutting the umbilical cord. Monorail, man.
All right.
That's great.
So I can't emphasize enough, as a Disney fan, the monorail was synonymous with the Disney company for like 50 fucking years.
Yeah.
And as we move forward in history, I think it might be a tie. Like, you will remember the monorail from this episode of The Simpsons, or if you've ever been to Disney World, not land, because that's just a fucking ride in Disneyland, whereas in World, it's a means of conveyance, because, Jesus, I don't want to go on too long, but Walt Disney was trying to manifest a world that didn't exist and create new forms of technology and conveyance, and that's what the monorail is. And in Disneyland, it is the train. It's how in Disney World, it's the train.
It's beautiful to say. Like,
in Disneyland, it's a thing you circle the park in.
Right.
Well, and I wrote it at Tokyo Disneyland as well. It's the circling
it
the
is.
Park.
It is. And like, but nobody else has this. Mm-hmm. I meant to look into it a little more. Like, is there a city with a fucking monorail?
Isn't BART a monorail?
I think it might be.
It's tracks. It's train tracks. It's not one rail.
I'm disappointed now.
Sorry. And as we all know,
it's
mono
a
means
train,
one, and rail means rail.
I should have counted the rails.
This episode is also...
But that's where the term comes from. You wouldn't remember the term monorail if you didn't go to Disney. Like, monorail, why is it called the monorail? Because it's only on one rail. Every fucking transit system's on one rail, maybe touching one piece of electricity.
Don't pee on the third rail.
Yes.
And this episode is directed by Rich Moore, who, as I bragged about before on here, I got to interview him at the Wreck-It Ralph premiere, but I specifically thanked him for this episode and said, like, I wanted to shake people. I told him at the event, I wanted to shake people there that they didn't realize, like, yes, this is a great animation director and he made a great film. Mm-hmm. But he made the fucking monorail episode. Yeah. He directed the monorail episode of Simpsons. Like, he's the most important person here.
He is so funny on this commentary. If you haven't listened to it, because they're praising Conan nonstop, and he is giving them shit for it. He's like, did Conan animate this scene?
Yeah.
And he's so but he's old friend. Like, he's worked with Gene and Reese.
Yeah, it's playful.
Tons of stuff. Yeah. Like, it's playful. But you definitely can get the feel of the animators versus the writers on this thing.
I love that rivalry.
There are a certain people I can boil down who created my sense of humor for me in my life. And it's down to three people if The Simpsons is people. And the other people are Conan O'Brien and Bob Odenkirk.
Yeah.
But Conan O'Brien, just because, like, everything I loved in SNL, everything I loved in The Simpsons, and when I can't really describe that in, like, a pre-internet world, like, finding Conan O'Brien on late at night and, like, a friend who would tape it, and, like, it was just the funniest thing to us.
It really was.
And it is, maybe not now, but it was a living cartoon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it felt like that era's version of the Eric Andre Show, yeah, where you had no idea what you were going to watch. There were fake guests on the show that were like UCB improv people. It was great. Like, you would never know what you were going to get every episode.
There's a great clip on the new Conan show where Brian McCann quits, and they show all his characters. And it's like
FedEx
Gay Pump? Lincoln, the guy who bowls whales. And the FedEx Pope.
Yeah.
The FedEx Pope is all stupid shit. It's all little cartoon characters.
Masturbating bear, pimp butts. Yeah.
All that stuff.
My favorite was them being so obvious about their joke. They said, "Isn't that right? Cactus Chef playing We Didn't Start the Fire on a pan flute." And he just did it on that same thing where he talked about the election.
Yeah.
He said, "But I just want to make you laugh." Yes. And so
Tall Dachshund.
There is one bit that sticks with me. It was an entire episode. He would do these conceptual episodes, and one was he was locked in a meat locker, I believe, with Gilbert Gottfried.
Oh, yes.
And it was like a clip show, but there were guests coming into the meat locker with him, and it was all one talk show episode. I was like, my favorite shows as a kid were things that were, I was always like, this should not be on the air, so I love it. And that was one of them.
So
Mystery Science Theater, Conan,
Space
Ghost.
I remember riding the school with my dad, and like they'd play Letterman's Top 10, and my dad would fucking crack up, and I'd love it. And I did love watching Letterman, but like Conan spoke to me. Really did.
I think he is our Letterman.
I think he's absolutely Letterman, our Letterman.
Especially the early weird stuff, like Letterman's early weird
stuff. Like, I'm not even politically active. I remember when Obama was like going through an election, I'm like, Conan better come out of this on top. I'm not messing around. Like, I don't care about anything else going on in the world right now. Conan deserves the Tonight Show.
And there was the belief that he would not last. Like, one of the most stated critic jokes is when Jay Sherman is bumped from his table by Conan O'Brien. The joke was like, no one knows who Conan O'Brien is. Jay Sherman is this low in the totem pole.
It does seem a little harsh on Conan.
Yeah, but again, it was made by Al Jean and Mike Reese.
Who knew him?
All right, but let's get into the episode.
Yes, it opens
amazingly. Oh, sorry,
it is amazing, but I think Bob and I cheated a little bit chatting a tiny bit before
here,
but
sorry,
I do think that you could cut out, like, the story of this episode is 15 minutes.
Yeah.
It's about 6 minutes of filler, including this, which is great filler, but the Flintstones opening has nothing to do with anything.
Simpson, Homer Simpson, he's the greatest guy in history. From the town of Springfield, he's about to hit a chestnut tree.
I just love how prolonged everything is.
Yes,
it makes a good comedy. I just do find it odd, and I'll never be able to describe this if you're too young to remember when this aired, but The Simpsons could only be described in conjunction with the Flintstones at this point.
Yeah.
And they've never really acknowledged that connection. And it just feels odd. This is the episode that most people love to death. And this is the one where they like embrace the Flintstones.
Well, they break reality multiple times. That in Mr. Plow, just recently with Mr. Plow, which is by no means a grounded episode.
No.
But in Mr. Plow, him totaling his car is the start of a story, and this time it's just like, and Homer totals his car. But anyway, that doesn't even matter. He'll be driving that car in 8 minutes.
And I say now as an old man, it's totally worth it to see him slide down that rail and through the window of his car. It's great.
And the guy pulling the guy, they just drew the same guy, just not in a, just in Simpsons non-Flintstone style. But okay, so then
all of it makes me very happy.
All the Southern governors who are crooks, they love there.
But he said, Lenny said, ship it up to the Southern governors who are crooks. And that, I thought that was just the first time the Simpsons writers are misleading you as to where Springfield is, because I don't know how you ship things up to the Southerners.
They're in the Virgin Islands right now.
They're somewhere in the Philippines.
And then we get another dose of that Axel F. ripoff theme.
Yeah.
And then we get a squirrel with laser eyes and a tree with tentacles. This is such a silly episode.
You're right. It really does go like, we just did Homer's Bypass, which is a very grounded,
about as grounded as season four gets,
I don't know. I call it perfect Simpsons because it utilizes itself well as a cartoon, whereas this is very, it's just not a show about people right now.
No, I mean, Mr. Burns and Smithers are doing the dirty work that their hired goons should be doing, like literally cramming trees full of barrels of toxic waste. I love it. I love it. But it's
what I love in Last Exit to Springfield too, that Burns and Smithers just do everything. Mm-hmm. Like they stopped. They stopped delegating.
And they also really commit to a Silence of the Lambs parody. No reason.
Also, the cruelty of the joke. All those bald children are arousing suspicion. Like, ouch. You've given, like, he's killing children.
And I believe they use that. Okay, so Burns is wheeled in like Hannibal Lecter is. Did they use that joke in Bart the Murderer when Bart is wheeled in? I think it's the same joke because,
But again, it's like, it's 1 year after this movie won Oscars.
It makes more sense with Burns.
It
does. He deserves to be wheeled in like that.
I love this scene because,
Mr. Burns, in light of your unbelievable contempt for human life, this court fines you $3 million.
Smithers, my wallet's in my right front pocket. Oh, and I'll take that Statue of Justice, too.
Sold!
I hate to be all lefty on this. There's a great documentary out there called Hot Coffee.
Yeah.
And where they talk about punitive damages and what those mean. And it's because, like, Burns took this fee as of, like, well, that's the cost of doing business.
Yeah.
I'll just keep doing it. Mm-hmm. But if you're charged for every instance of it and you have to give it to one plaintiff, maybe you won't. And again, that hot coffee, because that was a subject of like, a woman, dumb fucking broad, spills coffee in her lap and she gets billions of dollars.
It's
like,
America.
Yeah. It's the government saying you are repenting for everybody you've ever done this to.
Knowing the truth behind that, I felt like I was lied to because it was really just like, oh, it's a negligible business. I should have known better. Yeah. Not a dumb customer. Like, this
it
woman
wasn't a dumb
was
customer.
Burned irreparably.
She's dead now, so they could show pictures of her
parts.
Melted her skin.
Melted vagina. And and why was it so McDonald's didn't have to switch its coffee out and keep it so hot they could never make more and keep it sanitary.
Yeah.
And it also hurt people. Mm-hmm. And like that, I don't know.
Like,
the
coffee's too hot. Like, yeah, it was. It was too hot.
I can't speak for Conan, but I think that was part of the joke that like people who can buy their way out of lawsuits like this purchased Lady Justice. Yeah. And it's on the next shot. It's like Smithers is holding it with a happy face. I never noticed
that. And then they also didn't free... He's getting rolled down the stairs. It's still in the thing. Like, they didn't free him from that.
I think Burns just likes not walking. He prefers that kind of transportation.
I also love the return...
of Smithers.
I love the return of the runner that Homer only likes bad comic strips and that he loves Andy Cap.
Oh, please. You wife-beating drunk.
Oh, Andy Cap. You wife-beating drunk.
Ooh, there's going to be a town meeting to decide how to spend Mr. Burns' money.
Oh, what a boon it could be for our underfunded public schools.
I'm sorry, I love this.
Children, it's time for your history lesson. Put on your virtual reality helmets.
Excellent. Hello, Lisa. I'm Genghis Khan. You go where I go. Defile what I defile. Eat who I eat.
It's such a vile thing they conveyed with PG television dialogue of who Genghis Khan
That's
was.
That's another scene I feel like was ADR'd. I feel like he was
the
saying something else.
His mouth is moving weird.
Yeah, I wonder.
I have a feeling defile was something they had to define
maybe,
later
maybe.
On.
That at the end felt like a Rita Repulsa. Like, syllables.
I love that. I thought it was him going... You want to hang out?
But I still love virtual. They just came out with a PS, PlayStation VR.
24 years later, this is maybe a reality.
Later.
Yeah,
almost a reality, Bob.
Yeah, and like in '93, he would be like a pterodactyl made out of three polygons, teaching Lisa about science. I think so.
And also Bart's dream of the giant mechanical ants. Mm. That was fun. But all these three, it's more filler. Like, we got to
really
fill
is.
Some time. Like, have them dream up stuff. Watch more
it really
TV.
Is. This is why I'm more than happy to skip people to, like,
that,
the town
that
hall.
Scene with the ants, though, I was thinking, like...
I love it.
Fantasizing about blowing up your school and killing your principal was a much more innocent dream in '93.
It was. And, like, I just remember, like, I never heard Alice Cooper School's Out for Summer until a Nickelodeon promo.
It was like
School's Out for Summer, and they showed the kids like setting the school on fire, and Mad, and like I go to the school, the newsstands, and Mad Magazine, and I made a song out of this. I can't remember. Mad Magazine sizzling school sucks issue. Every kid was validated with their idea that like school is terrible. You should burn it all down.
I believe they had the slogan "Down with Homework."
But I don't mean to hate on all these dream sequences or cutaways, because almost all very, very funny.
Yeah.
They fill time, but they're so good.
And I don't mind. It's a non-Halloween episode, and multiple people get dismembered in this episode.
Yeah, it really does happen a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So then they finally do the town meeting, which I think also leads to one of my all-time favorite snake lines.
Yeah.
Could this town...
I don't have it, but...
Could this town be any stupider? Love it.
Order! Please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Get to the money!
In a moment. First, let's review the minutes from our last meeting.
Get to the money!
Get to the money!
Get to the money!
Very well. We will now hear suggestions for the disbursement of the $2 million.
Don't you mean $3 million?
Of course. How silly of me.
Okay, and then we have one of my favorite bits... in the entire series.
I'm the best character who never came back.
When it happened, I forgot. I was like, oh, this is...
Yeah.
This
it's very similar to his line of dialogue in the King Homer episode, but this is very clearly animated to what he's saying.
Yeah.
Because his eyes are so funny here.
Excuse me. We could use the money to hire firemen to finally put out that blaze on the east side of town.
Boring.
Hello, my name is Mr. Snrub, and I come from... someplace far away. Yes, that'll do. Anyway, I say we invest that money back in the nuclear plant.
I like the way Snrub thinks.
I love Smithers, like, just buying into it completely. Snrub.
It's the bald fist at your, like, at chest level. Like,
yeah.
I like the way Snrub...
And when I was a kid, when I realized Snrub was Burns backwards, yeah. I was even more impressed.
It's so immediate.
I just love someplace far away. Yes.
And then he
covered that up quite well.
It's such a theatrical mustache. Like, it's a terrible mustache.
Wider than his shoulders.
That feels so Conan O'Brien, too.
A fake mustache is a very Conan-y thing in this era.
And then their Batman, Michael Keaton Batman escape.
Yeah, that was very of the time Batman, right?
Yeah. I mean, it was. It's pretty much exactly how he saves Kim Basinger in the movie.
Got it. Yeah, it's been a while.
And didn't you think it was kind of weird that Joey the Goon was one of the guys about to beat up Burns? I was like, wow, you got to be mad, Joey. They were just using, we need a big guy.
Don't kill.
It's a small moment, but I just love how the meeting continues after that grappling hook scene. Just like, okay, next person.
I have a poo. When a poo starts talking, there's still a boo.
Yeah.
I would like to see this money spent on more police officers. I have been shot 8 times this year, and as a result, I almost missed work.
Crybaby.
My name is Marge Simpson, and I have an idea. It may sound a little boring at first.
Chat away. I'll just amuse myself with some pornographic playing cards.
Oh. Well, surely you've all noticed the terrible condition Main Street is in. Many of us have destroyed it by leaving winter chains on our tires and carrying too much weight.
These are all great visual jokes and introduced well by a narrated flashback, which hasn't really happened a lot in The Simpsons.
A million cutaways, though. Yeah. Like, so many cutaways. It is a template that The Simpsons would follow very closely after this. And then also, here comes Conan's hate of the elderly as well.
But I would give this line of the show, because this makes me laugh. When I think about when Hank Azaria's Bronson blue-collar guy makes me laugh.
Yeah, this is one of the best.
It doesn't make any sense
in audio.
It's
one syllable.
Yeah.
And those potholes are becoming a real nuisance.
Oh.
It's that a man doing a front flip with his car
into a bottomless chasm.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I feel like that's explode with popcorn.
That's the most energy that character can expel. He needs to be jaded about everything, including his own death.
And again, if you're a lefty, this will color everything like at this point, but I swear to God, this will be funny in 2 years, whereas who you elected won't.
Now, hold on just 1 minute. Sure. We could fix up Main Street. We could put all our eggs in one basket. Shut up! Wasn't done yet. I'm just saying, we could blow all our money on a stupid little street, but... I ain't fur it, I'm a guinea.
Okay, that's my line of the show. I ain't fur it, I'm a guinea. Thank you. I love the word spur and again.
Again is
I'm again it.
I love again it.
Yeah.
I always thought it would have to be like a prospector dispute in order for me to say again it.
Okay. And so then comes the arrival.
It does. And, like, how do we set this up?
This is an important moment. Sorry, Henry.
Conan was very happy to get Phil Hartman to do this role.
Conan gave... Phil Hartman is one of the best... In the top three SNL cast members of all time,
absolutely.
In my opinion.
I would agree with you.
And most of his dialogue was provided by Conan or the writers who worked on the show at the time.
But he was so good at everything. Yeah. And he's been a regular on the show, on The Simpsons, for a while now. But this is his first real starring role in an episode.
Where he's a central character in the show.
It wasn't a one-off joke with
Smooth, Jimmy Apollo.
Any of those characters. Yeah, and he... And yeah, he is also one of the greatest. It's really, like, I'd say he's better than any of the original cast members on SNL from, like, what he can deliver constantly.
They called Phil Hartman the glue because, I'll attribute it to Chris Parnell. Chris Parnell is a guy who doesn't flub his lines, gets everything correct, and is rarely the centerpiece of a sketch, but absolutely intrinsic to it.
Yeah,
and like that's what Phil Hartman was, and I'm seeing there's another guy in SNL right now, like, who, because I just watch SNL now, and like, really, no one can stop laughing, like, ever, like,
everyone's a little Fallon.
I know, but everyone is, except for there's a new guy, Mikey Day, who's who he reminds me of Dana Carvey. Jesus, that's high praise. If you're listening to this, do not contact me. I don't want to know anybody I care about is listening.
So this was his extended appearance. And as Conan had said, he wanted to write an episode that was part 70s disaster film and part The Music Man.
That's really important.
Yeah, it's another great, like, Simpsons incongruity, like two things that should not belong together, being together and working.
So do you think we need to hear Lyle first or the...
I want to say one thing. This sets an important precedent. I mean, there were songs on The Simpsons before, but they were in the context of a character listening to a song or performing a song. This is the first time a musical moment happens.
It's true.
Where a song happens to advance the plot. Everyone knows the words. Mm. The reality is broken for the sake of a performance of a song, but no one's like, we're going to put on a show. It's like, no, we all know the words.
Wow.
Yeah. This is the first time it happens.
Because they, like, even in the music video, like, Do the Bartman, it's a dream sequence. He's dreaming of his song. Like, they don't even break it in that one.
And like, Capital City was a song presumably on the radio and or whatever.
But... I mean, Tony Bennett's singing it on the street, but they are listening to it.
Yes.
Like, it's,
it Four is Street a... and B, yeah. But this is Lyle Landley, played by Phil Hartman.
Main Street!
All those in favor of Grandpa Simpson's plan
it's
for...
It's never Grandpa's
Street,
plan.
Please.
You know, a town with money's a little like the mule with a spinning wheel. No one knows how he got it, and danged if he knows how to use it.
Mule.
The name's Landley, Lyle Landley. And I come before you good people tonight with an idea. Probably the greatest... Oh, it's not for you. It's more of a Shelbyville idea.
Now, wait just a minute. We're twice as smart as the people of Shelbyville. Just tell us your idea, and we'll vote for it.
I have every...
Oh, you have to wait for the song.
Yeah, I mean, I have every musical angstrom of this song memorized because I had The Simpsons... I mean, still have it. The Songs in the Key of Springfield CD.
Yeah.
Oh, that has all the best songs from the first, like, eight seasons. I listen to this over and over,
over and over again.
It includes this intro, too. So it's like, I know... It's, like, etched into my brain.
Yeah.
But I still love every word of it.
But
his map of cities is great, though. They should have really, like, known, like, wait a minute, he drew those on that map.
Ogdenville, North Haven. It sure put... Because it's the biggest pause when I was capturing audio of it. Like, you have to look at the map and read four names.
Was Shelbyville on that map, or did he not say Shelbyville?
Like, he didn't say Shelbyville.
No, Shelbyville is not included, right?
Ogdenville.
Brogdenville.
Ogdenville.
Ogdenville, North Haverbrook. Brockway, Ogdenville, and North Haverbrook.
Yeah, that's right.
It sure put them on the map, and they're just in the middle of nowhere. It's great. It's
I guess
joke.
I don't have every angstrom memorized.
But
sorry.
Fuck it. But it's all based on what, Henry? I lean on my
man,
gay friend.
Yeah, it is. It is The Music Man, a popular Broadway musical from 1957.
I've seen this a bunch for some reason.
That was then made into a 1962 film, and both starred Robert Preston in the lead role as the huckster, who is... tricking a town into buying musical instruments, and then he's going to skip town until he falls in love with the gorgeous Shirley Jones.
And he needs to find another enemy. Am I right? He creates the villain in the form of, again, election is colored this a little.
The
bit.
Villain is Vice, right?
Well, and so this is the song that I think is, if you've never seen The Music Man, I think this is the song that that they're taking off on.
They
the
really
monorail.
Are. He's dressed exactly the same.
Hysteria!
friends. The idle brain is the devil's playground. Trouble!
Oh, yeah, trouble!
Right here in River City.
Right here in River City.
With a capital T, and that rhymes with P, and that stands for fool.
We surely got
trouble. We surely got trouble. Right here in River City.
Right here.
Gotta figure out a way to keep the young ones moral after school. Mothers of River City, heed that warning before it's too late. Watch for the telltale signs of corruption. The minute your son leaves the house, does he rebuckle his knickerbockers below the knee? Is there a nicotine stain on his index finger? A dime novel hidden in the corn crib? Is he starting to memorize jokes from Captain Billy's whiz bag? Are certain words creeping into his conversation? Words like swell. So's your old man. But if so, my friends, we got trouble.
Oh, we got trouble.
Right here in River City.
Right here in River City.
With a capital T, and that rhymes with P, and that stands for pool.
So everyone is waving their arms in the air like they do in the monorail song.
They're all dressed like this, the bow tie, the straw hat. Yeah, like...
That actor's great. That Roberts Preston, I wondered why I hadn't seen him in more stuff, and it's because that made him a star, the Music Man on Broadway, and he did that film and a couple other films, but then he's like, yeah, back to Broadway. Back to live theater.
I love that mentality. Like, I'll just go back to the theater. Like,
these
I don't
pictures
need your fucking
are
movies.
Over, yeah.
I'll get paid the same.
I'll move back to the East Coast to make the same.
was that like a period piece, though? It doesn't feel like it was from the 50s. It feels like it's from like the 20s or the 30s.
My mother speaks in language of musicals. Mm. So when I hear the word, we got trouble, she's like, right here, we're shitty. And then... I moved out here. I'd never seen a Wells Fargo bank. And if you've never heard the Wells Fargo wagon, that's from this movie too.
Okay.
And then like it's that bank is not Wells Fargo from the movie. It licensed the name from the fucking movie.
Wow.
Because that's how famous it used to be. I could be totally wrong about that.
I think the Wells Fargo bank was established in the 19th century.
Yeah, but I think it went bust. Like it didn't exist when I was a little kid. But like the Wells Fargo wagon was a song for my mother's generation that they sang.
Gotcha.
Also, if I may begin our usual minute of hate speech about Family Guy. Family Guy rips off The Simpsons by ripping off Music Man as well. Not really.
As a gay fan of musicals, you should love what Family Guy does on a regular basis.
Well, actually, I was looking this song up, and one of the hits on YouTube was Seth MacFarlane singing, and I was just like, fuck you.
He did his own I Watched It. He did a parody of it, which was about how important writers are. And so
was it for the Writers Guild strike?
It was for the Writers Guild.
Well, I have more respect for him now.
So he at least did it for that, and I'm glad that billionaire could talk about how important it was for writers to get their tens of thousands of dollars. But the
can he do anything right?
He popularized Shapoopy, though.
Best thing he did was to not write for American Dad.
Yes. But that version of Shapoopy is not as good as the one in the Music Man film by Buddy Hackett.
But it's really good. Shapoopy is from the same film.
Yeah, that's right.
Which Family Guy does an entire verbatim. I showed a shave in bed.
But okay, the song.
The song. Whoa, no, we have to wait for that.
Oh, God, no.
In the episode.
Well,
if you want to hear it now, we can hear it.
I'm getting musical
Let's
blue
hear
balls.
A little bit here.
Well, sir, there's nothing on earth like a genuine, bona fide, electrified six-car monorail. What I say?
Monorail.
What's it called?
Monorail.
That's right, monorail.
Monorail. Monorail. Monorail.
I hear those things are awfully loud.
It glides as softly as a cloud.
Is there a chance the track could bend?
Not on your life, my Hindu friend.
What about us Brendan slobs?
You'll be given cushy jobs.
Were you sent here by the devil?
No good, sir. I'm on the level.
The ring came off my pudding can.
Take my penknife, my good man. I swear it's Springfield's only choice. Throw up your hands and raise your voice.
Monorail.
What's it called?
Monorail.
Once again.
Sorry, Mom, the mob has spoken.
Monorail! Monorail!
Monorail!
Monorail! Mono! Don't!
The wall is really... Don't!
So we saw the problem with rings on pudding cans in the Streetcar Named Marge episode. I do want to point out, though,
they're obsessed with that.
There is a musical thing happening in this song where in the phrases where Lyle Landley is talking, like "Take my penknife, my good man," and "Glides as softly as a cloud," that part of the music was composed to the animation. They just told Alf Klaus and just put in some music to when he's hitting the key. So that's why it's like plink plink.
So it's
plink,
done after
plink.
The fact.
Yeah.
There's
so that's
a word
why
for that, and I forgot.
That's
it.
Why it sounds like kind of off. But it's what he's actually playing in the animation by an animator who's not thinking about this music.
It, like Disney made its bones by like creating animation to existing music.
This is the other way around. Like,
yeah, it was.
Animation was created first, but that's why his musical phrases sound a little off. It's like plink, 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 plink.
Also, when he tells them to raise up their hands, I love Herman's right there in the middle with his one arm going up and not the other
one. Henry, you love musicals, right?
Yes.
Oh, gosh.
But no. It's more because like I remember how I first saw this film. All the cool kids in sixth grade were signing up for it was the first time you were like, you can sign up for classes. Mm-hmm. What are the cool kids doing? They all want chorus because it's easy as shit. You don't even you don't even have to like hold a pencil. And the first thing she did was like, this is what this whole class is about. And that noise of like a VHS going inside.
Ka-chunk.
Yeah. But like amplified through a fucking PA system. And then Music Man. And that's when I first saw the Music Man in sixth grade. I don't know where this stands in the pantheon of like popular musicals. I don't know if Conan and the Simpsons writers are making a very obscure reference.
I mean, Conan loves the Music Man, and he even talks about how like in the late 90s he had been asked to be part of a revival of the Music Man on Broadway. It was big. Like, it was big
it was
in 57. Yeah, it just... It's not a it's kind of in the dead zone.
I've never seen
a modern one.
I've never seen it on television. I've never seen it. I've seen Music Man's coming on TCM. Like, but you don't see it on like networks. And
it's pretty rare. Even though people know songs from it, like
for real.
Especially like the trombone songs. Music, trombone.
I think the state of musicals now. I'm completely ignorant, by the way, but it's either Hamilton or a musical based on a movie from like 95 or 96. Like, there's a Matilda musical, like a
Shrek
musical. Yeah,
that failed, but
it's Hamilton or nothing else. That's the only thing people have the memory
but
for.
Like growing up in a town of I'll just call them gay women who love their Rodgers and Hammerstein. Like, I watch
Kinder
this,
and Ed.
I watch this a bunch, but like I don't
it wasn't one of my top ones. I'll have to say,
I think Bye Bye Birdie owns mostly because of Anne Margaret.
I do too, but I don't
also see, Paul Lynn and that. Well, it's Paul Lynn on Broadway, but Dick Van Dyke.
But where we stand right now, almost none of you listening have seen The Music Man, nor have you ever heard of it.
Yeah,
I would believe that,
and so that's why I find it kind of weird. Like, I knew this almost instantly. Like,
well,
this
I was raised on
Man.
70s and 80s musicals. Like, I listened to Les Mis and all the Andrew Lloyd Webber stuff way more than I listen to the older things like that. And so the synthesizer and like, cry for me.
Like, Mom, I'm having trouble with this math problem. Trouble. Like, shut up, Mom! Just fucking help me! I don't want to sing a song!
Before we move on, I want to say it's a giant failure of the karaoke industry that there are never Simpsons songs at karaoke.
Real.
I am always mad when
I
look through that giant book, never Simpsons songs. Get on that, guys. Get on that right now.
The Simpsons will be right back.
Thank you so much for listening to Talking Simpsons. Hey, people, got some good news for you. This episode... Oh, yeah, I know you like the episode. This episode is brought to you by Audible. And if you don't know what Audible is, I'm about to tell you, because I have to. Audible is the internet's leading source for audiobooks, comedy, radio shows, spoken entertainment, they call it, that works on your desktops, phones, Androids, tablets. You know the drill, but they have over 180,000 titles to choose from, so odds are, if you like listening to stuff like this, you'll like listening to stuff on Audible. Obviously, they've got their bestsellers over there, your Harry Potters, your Game of Thrones, your Dunes, your Girls with the Dragon Tattoos, but I wanted to tell you guys, because of this episode, you can go to audibletrial.com/lasertime and get started with a free audiobook. What free audiobook? Dude, how about I Am Spock? Written and read to you by Leonard Nimoy. The world needs laughter. And for a different perspective on Spock, how about Leonard? My 50-year friendship with a remarkable man. Written and narrated by William Shatner. I shouldn't have to convince you anymore. You know the Audible service. And if you want to try this and listen to books like this for yourself and 180,000 others, go to audibletrial.com/lasertime and get started for yourself.
Are you already tired of 2016? Jump into the past with 302010, our weekly pop culture time machine podcast.
Here's something you may remember from 1986.
Othello. A brilliant film, tremendously compelling, a great adventure. Gene Shalit, NBC TV. An accessible, overwhelmingly handsome movie version of a classic. A potent shot of cultural adrenaline.
I didn't realize how
Bruce
good
Williamson
was.
Playboy. Even if you're not an opera fan.
Oh my God.
Keep going. Let it play.
You'd be thrilled by the passion and beauty of this film. And if you are an opera fan, the film is a must. Canon Films proudly presents Othello.
There. So I wanted to mention, because we talked about Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 last week. That was released by Canon Films. Robotech is released by Canon Films this week, as well as Othello. If you, again, if you haven't seen that documentary Electric Boogaloo on Canon Films, the Golan Globus team of just, let's just make everything happen. But there's already a Robotech movie in Japan, and they're like, don't use any of our characters. So they combine two different, an OVA and a television show.
Yeah, Megazone 23 and the Southern Cross, which are like unrelated things.
Totally unrelated. A full-screen Robotech movie for America with none of the characters anybody recognizes. This is in 1 week. This is what, in 2 weeks, Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2. This is one company releasing all three of these films in a seven-day period.
Also, I don't believe it. Like, the very beginning of that, there's a Gene Shalit quote, and there's no puns or wordplay.
Yeah, I was really surprised by that.
Othello. Go, Othello. Go, Othello, to Othello. You'll love it.
That's 30, 20, 10, a weekly look at what happened in pop culture 30 years ago, 20 years ago, and 10 years ago, every Thursday right here on the Laser Time Network.
So that song, it's all downhill from there. No, it's actually still a great episode after that. If you want to hear me talk about The Flash versus Superman, I can do it all day, but when he goes to the class, he even fools Lisa. It's a rare time as a kid, I thought, oh, Lisa's going to be the one who sees through this. I was shocked when it was Marge, who's kind of the hero of it, that they lose the plot a little bit in that.
But maybe that's the point, especially because they were writing this episode for 2016, weren't they?
Yeah, they even fooled Lisa.
Lisa had a good point, though. Like, Springfield is small and shitty. Why do they need a monorail?
But I also love that the fucking monorail salesman goes to an elementary school class.
To sell them on it, yes.
To teach kids, but
I just one of my favorite lines.
Oh, you.
Now I'm here to answer any questions you children may have about the monorail.
Me! Can it outrun the Flash?
You bet.
Can Superman outrun the Flash?
Sure, why not? Hello, little girl. Wondering if your dolly can ride the monorail for free?
Hardly. I'd like you to explain why we should build a mass transit system in a small town with a centralized population.
Young lady, that's the most intelligent question I've ever been asked.
Really?
Oh, I could give you an answer. But the only ones who'd understand it would be you and me. And that includes your teacher. Next question. You there, eating the paste.
So
I guess it can't be Ralph eating the paste, but they never Ralph show already it. Asked a question.
But I was going to say, like, after this scene is probably one of the more egregious uses of reused animation. Go ahead, though.
I do want to say,
I want to hear about that.
Superman versus the Flash. Okay. I did... It was something I was already obsessed about as a kid. I was one of those kids who said, but who is faster? And a brief history on that is that DC never even liked thinking about that. They rarely had their characters team up with each other and then put in competition. It wasn't until the mid-60s that they had their first Superman and Flash race. But like three times in a row, they always had a cop-out ending to say who was faster. But mostly it was Superman was seen as the faster one, which wasn't very fair to Flash.
That's why Dragon Ball has power levels.
Well, Superman doesn't break the universe.
So this is pre-Crisis Superman, who he could do everything.
Okay.
And the Flash could also do everything, but Superman did it just a little bit faster. But since then, they have made it clear that Superman can be extremely fast, but he follows the rules of thermodynamics, meaning friction, weight, gravity, all those things. The Flash has the superpower to ignore all those things.
I love
so he's always faster.
So Lyle Landley was wrong.
His modern explanation is that the Flash can move between molecules. And that's really
neat. Again, no friction, no, like, he can vibrate through anything, and there's, to make it really clear how fast he is than Superman these days, in the comic Flash Rebirth, there's a scene where Superman is telling Barry Allen, he says, Barry, you got to stay here. You can't, he's like, don't run away from me. And Barry's like, I gotta go. And then Superman says, hey, you know, we've raced before. I've even beaten you a couple times. And Flash says, that's for charity. And he immediately loses him. Like, he gets away from Superman like that. So,
dude, again, Flash
people,
book is real good.
Flash is faster than Superman.
So, I know you didn't capture this, Chris, but I want to point it out. As with Mr. Plow, there's a lot of time wasters in this episode. And one of the most egregious uses of...
The low point of this season.
Yeah, Truckosaurus the movie. I feel like this is an Al Jean and Mike Reese joint because they love making cheap jokes about Brando and the Critic. It has to be theirs.
Truckosaurus the movie?
Yeah.
I'm not fucking around. The file I had does not have that, but I do remember it.
Yeah. I mean, it's on the DVDs.
Watching from the.
It's You Crazy Car. I don't know whether to crush you or kiss you, and it just wastes like
it's just a
30
time,
seconds.
But then it goes straight to the commercials. So.
In terms of your memories and how you'll enjoy the show starts when the town hall meeting.
Yeah,
and then into like Marge figuring out something is wrong, and it does waste a shitload of time. See,
but Homer, Marge, I want to be a monorail conductor.
Homer, no,
it's my lifelong dream.
Your lifelong dream was to run out on the field during a baseball game, and you did it last year, remember?
So let's go over the lifelong dreams. We have the car shaped like a bowling pin, the bottomless pit. Was there another one?
Not to that point. Oh, yeah, eat the world's biggest hoagie. That was before this.
Yeah, so we have four now, four of his lifelong dreams.
And that I forgot the music, like the da-da-da-da, like that comes in there. It
reminds me of Arrested Development.
I'm surprised it wasn't like a minor key
version
of that.
The last season of Arrested Development, whenever they talk about how far George Michael got with Maybe, they just say Pete Rose getting the third base.
He went there head first.
And they would just do an air horn.
Yeah. Also, Idiot Ruins Game. I love that headline so much. But when Homer's watching the commercial, it's eerie that, like, the guy is him. It's him on TV. And also, a joke I'd never noticed till now. First, they say, does whiskey count as beer? Then Homer is drunk watching it.
Yeah.
And when they angle on him saying, it's been my lifelong dream, there are, like, three beer bottles at the at the foot of the sofa.
Crazy.
Look for it, guys.
I like to think that is the good Homer from No Disgrace Like Home. His life has turned to shit, and he's sitting on a couch.
You're not thinking of poor Hoju.
I love Hoju.
True or false? You can get mono from riding the monorail.
False. No, wait. Maybe it's true.
No, you were right. It's false. Wow, you really are going to be a monorail conductor.
That's right, boy.
You know, I used to think you were stuck in an emasculating go-nowhere job.
Kids.
But now... I want to follow in your footsteps.
Do you want to change your name to Homer Jr.? The kids can call you Hoju.
I'll get back to you.
So like Homer, like Bart, I am, I'm not like Hoju, but I am a junior, so I could be Bob Jew. And like Bart, my dad is a deadbeat drunk, so I'm not known as Bob Jew.
I'm just reminded of the low standards we have for people we look up to who give both answers instead of one and are right. I don't want to go any further.
Let's not name names.
I also like the, I hate that sound. Like, it is a like 10-second joke, but it is pretty funny.
Yeah.
So yeah, I thought it was a nice change up that it's Marge who finds the problem and who is the lone sane person in town right after learning about possums.
This makes me very happy.
According to this book, the monorail goes over 150 miles an hour. What if something goes wrong?
What if I'm taking a shower and I slip on a bar of soap? Oh my God, I'd be killed.
Frightens me that you want to work on something that's so unsafe.
We monorail conductors are a crazy breed, half in love with death, gobbling up danger like ordinary men eat peanuts. Am I turning you on?
No.
What if I undo this button?
Good night, Homer.
What if I talk like this? What if I sing to you? I gave my love a chicken, it had no bone.
Doesn't that song make you sad? Like, him singing that song makes me feel so much older. Than how old America is.
Because you're supposed to get that reference?
That is a folk song specifically for America. Mm. That dates back to like the fucking 16th century or something like that.
Wow. Damn.
It's called the Riddle Song.
I had to investigate it as a kid. I
gave my love a cherry that had no stone. Gave my love a chicken that had no bone.
Ladies and gentlemen, Doc Watson.
Give it up. He's probably dead. Hooray.
Covered by Joan Baez. Yeah. Like, I think famously, when looking at the wiki entry, is that like, that's the song John Belushi grabs the guitar from the person and smashes
right.
He's singing this
You're
song.
Right. You know what?
Animal House.
Yeah, an Animal House.
I didn't
yes.
look this up. I assume Homer was thinking of a song, but was substituting lyric like food for
no,
actual lyrics.
Is,
but it's the real lyrics.
It's,
wow.
It's almost
also,
verbatim.
It's a folk song, so they didn't have to pay nobody. It's that old
tradition. It is a public domain song.
Yeah. That is, but again, a cheap joke of like pause for pauses on darkness for 10 seconds.
Wow, they really were filling air.
But yeah. It was funny. It's still funny. They even mock Rich Moore on the commentary. Like, you say this episode was hard. You didn't even have to draw eyeballs here.
You know what? I'm gonna give this my line of the show.
That's the joke.
So then, mono means one, and rail means rail. And that concludes our intensive 3-week course.
Sorry. Every time you could show me a screenshot of Lyle Landley with his hand in front of the chalkboard. It makes me laugh so much.
It really makes you think, what did they cover before that? Like, what were they even doing in class for 3 weeks?
Oh, just devastating. Like, just lambasting government bureaucracy and why everyone doesn't have a monorail.
Yeah.
Anyway.
And that's like top of the show news that Homer is the monorail conductor. It's big news. And his file photo is one of my favorite images in Simpsons history. I love it so much.
And he's just chosen at random and like he's like waving his hand across the room. He's like, you will be the new conductor.
And I didn't notice that until now that everybody in the classroom is pointing at themselves.
Yeah.
And Homer's the first one that says, you mean me? He's like, yeah, sure. Everybody thought it was them.
And Homer is dressed like as the conductor, as like I think Darth Vader's second in command.
That's one of my favorite moments in any commentary ever.
Yeah,
because like Matt Groening is, it's right after this, which Matt Groening says is his favorite joke in Simpsons history.
Mm-hmm.
Homer, there's a family of possums in here.
I call the big one Bitey.
I'm going to see Mr. Landley.
So
that's the joke.
Doing it because that's Matt Groening's line of the show.
Yeah.
He said that's his favorite line ever. And then, like, I love in the commentary, it's like, so who is Homer dressed as here? And, like, you hear someone take a deep sigh.
It's
not a real
Star
nerd.
Star Wars.
I think this is the character that Colonel Sanders is parodying in Spaceballs.
Yeah, yeah. Who was also John Ratzenberger was one of the...
It's one of those things. I'm just a big pig in Toy Story movies now.
And may he live forever. I'll be sad when he isn't in a Pixar film again.
Yeah, that'll be the end for John. Old Ratsy.
Marge uncovers the monorail truth by going to, shit, what town was it?
North Haverbrook.
North Haverbrook.
Yes.
Ain't no monorail in the Nibelung.
It's so much fun.
Yeah.
If you ever traveled through the South and seen these shitty towns where one thing was meant to save them.
Yeah.
I live around these towns. I really did. I grew up around them.
Oh, my shitty town. There were several Lyle Landleys coming into town. Like, at one point, there was like a blimp factory that was going to save Youngstown, Ohio. Like, there's always these hucksters coming in, like industry hucksters. Like, we're going to put this factory in your town.
We would drive to the fucking beach or to my grandparents. My dad would be able to point out, this is the thing that the town rallied behind. And people moved here to do this.
Yeah.
And they all got fucked. And some of them are still here. And it's just very strange. This is an old-timey thing, and I hope it doesn't exist anymore. I hope someone can't swindle a whole town. Or a country.
Yeah. It never happened.
It never happened.
Outlandish promises.
We're broadcasting from Earth 2.
But Homer, I was thinking about this for the first time. Marge finds his crude drawings of how he's going to steal everything from the city. When she finds that out, she drives alone to North Haverbrook.
Yeah.
Does she tell the family what she's doing? She really should have told Homer, hey, Homer, I'm kind of worried about this monorail. I'm going to go out of town.
I have to tell you. That's part of the conspiracy theory on where Springfield is for people, because Marge didn't tell anybody and drove by herself and made it there before the sunset.
Yeah.
Or the sun was already down.
Ah, so it has to be, unless she was gone for 2 days.
And they show
something.
It on a map.
Yeah, it's true.
I think it does fit in with Marge's character. She's like, I don't want to worry anybody. Like, she would go off on her own just to not rock the boat in a very Marge-like way.
But they meet something like, man, I hope you guys can help me here. This is the truth about the monorail system.
Excuse me, miss. You asked about the monorail.
Who are you?
My name is Sebastian Cobb. Landley hired me to build his monorail. He cut corners everywhere. Bad wiring. Faulty brakes. As a celebrity on the maiden voyage was Gallagher. This is all that's left of one of the crappiest trains ever built.
Mr. Cobb,
What can we do?
You just better have a damn good conductor.
So I like to do this research on our own so we can sound really smart in front of you, but I don't know who this person is.
Well, they say on the commentary it was supposed to be Max von Sydow.
Yeah.
Or it looks similar to him.
Like, yeah, but like it's, in, the design is too specific to not be a reference to something.
Well, it's also
he's an old German man in a town where technology has failed.
Yeah.
I refuse to believe this isn't a very specific reference. Visually, he's the basis for Farnsworth from Futurama.
That's a little bit, true. Yeah. I want to say, like, he is probably a character in one of those 70s disaster movies that
sure.
even they can't remember.
And, like, I don't know which one that is.
Like, or a disgraced scientist who knows how to solve the problem and probably dies.
It is a cliche in every movie.
Or even, even in a 50s B-movie like they'd have on MST3K, the scientist.
But he's old German and wearing sunglasses. Yeah. And I swear he's specific. You know, I don't know what it is.
Yeah. And also there's the joke Lost to Time where it's like we took a lot of German scientists after the war and they helped us build things. So it could be he could be a former Nazi too.
Yes.
For as far as we know. I'm not projecting anybody.
And in 1993, I still thought Gallagher was funny, and so it was a shock to me as a
kid.
I was like,
out of time.
Wait, Gallagher's not funny?
Yeah.
And he smashes things.
I had the same reaction here. Like this and MST3K taught me like I'm supposed to hate Gallagher.
Yeah.
And this was a time in America where you could walk into any video store and there'd be like a Gallagher section.
Yeah.
Melon crazy up in front.
Better than porn, they called it.
Oh god.
I saw the videos. My parents never got
it's negative
I don't know it. I don't know Gallagher.
I really screwed up the recording on this, by the way.
Is aren't
kid.
Men different than women?
But
liberals.
Smash-o-matic.
So when the act ends, they then start up. It then becomes the Towering Inferno, or Earthquake. All those. We've got famous people. They're all going to show up, and they're going to be in this disaster. And so everybody's so excited for the first ride on the monorail, and it's. It's a bunch of good little jokes in a row. You've got kind of a Rock Hudson reference.
Who I was going to ask, who is the recently outed person? That's the reference I was
making. Dash Calhoun.
Program.
Well, he works with so many. He could work with Dick Sargent. It could work with...
But who was recently outed in,
in the early 90s? I mean,
Robert Reed was dead.
No,
was he dead at this point?
I think so.
I thought we still had a very Brady Christmas to get through.
Dick
that could have been the 80s.
Dick Sargent had outed himself.
Really? I didn't even know that.
The Darren number two.
I got it wrong, but recently outed ladies man is a really fun show.
That is a good. And then he just showed up like Dash Calhoun. And when Krusty showed up, he's got an illegitimate kid, which he would show up. He'd have another illegitimate kid, but not that one.
Yeah, he had an illegitimate kid during the Gulf War who would be played by Drew Barrymore.
I would be 23 now.
Get over this. Women. Don't fuck clowns. Like, it doesn't matter what happens.
It's always a bad idea.
And never fuck clowns.
And they also have a Luke Perry parody.
Joke, yeah.
And they
from Springfield Heights, and we just talked to you about, like, The Heights was a show on the air right
now. Oh, man, wow. I forgot about that.
Yeah, so it's a 902/ The Heights reference. I'm drunk. I apologize.
So they call him 34, but I want to say Luke Perry was only 26 playing a high schooler.
Man, you did the same research as me. I looked that up, too. Like, how old was he really?
Yeah, was that research? Or you just have to open that book on your nightstand.
But he still had the crow's feet, the receding hairline.
Yeah. And now he's on the AARP magazine covers. And
which just sucks because, like, I'm visually so. Like, I watched Chappelle on SNL recently. And, like, we've aged the same way, which is none of the, like, crow's feet, the neck looks weird. We're just bigger and fatter.
Everyone just
stupider.
Gets wider, even if they don't get
wider.
Fatter.
Yeah. It sucks.
And as a 34-year-old now, I'm laughing too hard at the elderly 34-year-old.
But Luke Perry would be on in a later episode this season.
And
being Krusty's half-brother or something? Yeah.
And I consider the Lurling Lumpkin scene non-canonical.
Really?
It bothers me, too.
I don't like it.
It
almost felt like them pissing on their own creation. Like, we're never bringing her back. Fuck that.
I don't like this dark end for her, but I love Doris Grau's voice.
I do, too.
She's been dead for 20 years, but her voice is second to none.
And here's country singing sensation Lurleen Lumpkin, fresh from her latest stay at the Betty Ford Clinic. What you been up to, Lurleen?
I spent last night in a ditch.
How about that, folks?
God. No one's voice will ever sound like that, and that's why I miss Doris Grau.
Yeah. She's great.
Yeah.
And that's and also why she's gone.
Yes, exactly.
Also, this is one of those weird things where, like, we are living this accelerated course of Simpsons. Because, like, I feel like we just did this episode and, like, fell in love with Lorleen, and it's sullied for us within, like,
when it really was like 12
episodes.
Ago. Yeah. So then comes the big guest star on this, and I have a clip. My last clip is Conan O'Brien explaining how this happened.
He was not our first choice.
Our first choice was George Takei.
George Takei, who'd been on the show. We said, all right, let's bring him back. He's great.
And I did a passable George Takei impression, which I used to wheel out all the time.
And George Takei turned the episode down. We said, why? He goes, I don't make fun of monorails. He said, I think they're very serious. I don't want to make fun of them.
He was on the transportation board in San Francisco, and he didn't think as someone should. We went to the only actor in the world who took monorail seriously. And he was like, no, we can't do it. So then I thought, we're screwed. And then Leonard Nimoy said, I want to do it. He's like, Leonard Nimoy, Spock outranks.
Yeah.
That is trading
George
up.
George Takei, yeah.
That is trading up.
Yeah. I've heard this story before, and the idea that George Takei was like, that I cannot supersede my role in the monorail commission.
It was
the monorail's a thing that can happen.
It was a Southern California Rapid Transit District.
That really took off, didn't it?
He was on the board for that, yeah.
It's the right thing. He was on... George Takei is on the right side of history.
Yeah.
It's the right thing to do.
So George Takei was on When Flanders Failed, correct? And then he was played by Hank Azaria, that same character, in another episode.
Akira. And he was in Blowfish.
Yeah.
He was on Blowfish as well as Akira, yeah.
But it was Leonard Nimoy. I'm sorry, it was George Takei in Blowfish, too, right? Okay.
Yeah. And so, but he didn't want to come back for this. I think they thought they were aiming too low trying to get him and not going to Leonard Nimoy.
And that's because they tried asking Shatner, and he did not want to be on the show.
I don't think he ever has been. I don't think he has, but for something else,
they asked him, and he turned it down. So they were like, okay, we need to aim lower than Shatner. And Nimoy is on the same level as Shatner, so surely he would not do it.
Oh, hey, wait, actually, we don't play this sound effect much, but we do have cause for it, don't we?
Death stalks you at every turn. There it is, death.
Leonard Nimoy is one of the all-time best guests they've ever had, ever. I love him so much on this. Oh, I gotta hear it.
Now I'd like to turn things over to our Grand Marshal, Mr. Leonard Nimoy.
I'd say this vessel could do at least warp 5.
And let me say, may the force be with you.
Do you even know who I am?
I think I do. Weren't you one of the little rascals?
Rascals. Leonard Nimoy is so ready to be made fun of in this. He's just like, oh yeah, do whatever you want.
He's made fun of, like, in every time he appears, it's to mock Leonard Nimoy. Yeah.
So I know they're making fun of his Star Trek stuff, of course, but I feel like a lot of this character that he's playing is based on his In Search Of hosting
characters.
Role, which I have never even seen In Search Of, but apparently was huge in the 70s. All these writers grew up with it.
Yeah. Like, shit. There's a bunch of clips I had before that. Let me burn those off.
Mr. Landley! Aren't you going to ride the monorail?
Little lady, I'd love to, but I have to catch a plane.
But the ride only takes a minute.
Yeah, well, my plane leaves in less than 1 minute.
Fucking Brett does that anytime I give him a time limit.
Oh, yeah.
I have to leave in less than 1 minute. Yeah.
And I guess he got murdered. I guess he's killed. They lynch him on that plane.
Yeah, like, we don't see what happens, but Lyle Lanley never comes back as far as I know.
Yes, but, like, in terms of a viewer... They gave him, like, you wanted to see him get his comeuppance.
Yeah.
You don't really see it, and you did.
Yeah.
And it's great. It's so funny, though, to me, because he's flying down. Where am I landing? He doesn't know his layover.
No.
He's landing in North Haverbrook, and, like, people on the ground are like, seat 7B! They know what seat he's in.
Yeah,
they go attack 3F.
Him. And,
they can get on a tarmac. And, like...
In a very over-the-top Simpsons Season 4 touch, he's holding briefcases that have money, like, sticking out of the seams. Like, dollar bills are
just
jutting
like
out of
it.
Yeah.
Just like he drew it. I wanted to play this clip because, like, we talked about it earlier. I wish this was done more, the Quimby versus Wiggum stuff.
This is the last time we see it, too.
It might be the last time.
I'm going to take a nap.
All right, I'm in charge here.
Oh, run along, Quimby. I think they're dedicating a phone booth somewhere.
Watch it, you talking tub of donut batter.
Hey, I got pictures of you, Quimby.
You don't scare me. That could be anyone's ass. Now, beat it. I'm calling the shots.
I think that sash is cutting off the air to your brain. The town charter says in an emergency, I run the show.
Well, we'll just see about that. Let's go to town hall.
Fine. Should we take one car, or should I follow you? Hey, Carter, as chief constable, I'm supposed to get a pig every month. And two comely lasses of virtue true.
Keep the pig. How many broads do I get?
Hey, let go. You're ripping it.
No, you are.
No, you are.
Let go. That's the charter.
I love like the fucking... The town went by twice in the monorail. Yeah. during that scene. Both
in terms of the artistry, that document, you can't read the text, but it's lovingly rendered. You can actually make out Jebediah Springfield's signature in the center, along with a bunch of other ones. It's very well done.
I love that dynamic between Wiggum. Two incompetent people who can, like, whenever they come into a room, become like Perry Mason.
Got any dip for these ships or something?
Also, I like Marge's late arrival. It doesn't work in a post-cell phone world. Yeah. And though I did love they did a second design for the scientist for his haircut.
It's so funny. I shouldn't have stopped for that haircut. Will cure we'll your comedy of anything. You're allowed to show up to late. Show up to something late if you say I should.
It was
have
a real lantern hanging of a joke.
Do that next time you're late to a party. Uh-huh. Watch how well it works.
And did you guys notice there's the Hindenburg painting on the wall in the monorail? Yeah,
that's right.
Where they're getting drinks. It's great.
But this is my favorite clip because, like, I think we're on the verge of. I thought we were until the country decided they wanted to sink us into oblivion. That we were on the verge of progressive things like solar power. Mm. And I love this. This is one of those Simpsons responses to, like, Jimmy Carter or progressive measures.
Wait a minute. We can just shut off the power.
No such luck. It's solar powered.
Solar power. When will people learn?
A solar eclipse. The cosmic ballet goes on.
Does anyone want to switch seats?
It's like the meanest I've seen him to a guest star.
Yeah. So, like, I want to say that even as a kid, this bothered me because, like, a lot of cartoons at the time treated solar power like you would treat a calculator. Like, oh, it just comes on when the sun hits it, and then it turns off when the sun doesn't hit it. And it's like...
You can use it indoors. Light works on it.
Yeah, but it's like...
Let's utilize this.
I feel like it's excused because this monorail is such of a poor quality that it would work like a cheap calculator, you know? Just like, it turns on when the sun hits it, and then it turns off when it's no longer
this monorail
out.
Needs boobless.
Yeah.
There's one thing about building a monorail that will break soon, but there's another, like, they build a monorail that could not work for 5 minutes. Not even five minutes.
That's why my plane leaves less than 1 minute.
Yeah, Lyle Lanley got the fuck out.
I think the Batman exchange is an underrated, very great line, too.
But you're right, because this, like, that line is an In Search of line.
Yeah.
That's Leonard, which I don't know. I've had to look it up on YouTube because I never saw Leonard Nimoy's In Search of.
Well, because they didn't save it for any reason. Yeah. Like, they didn't play it when we were kids, and it was just...
Tenacious D introduced me to the idea that they
were. I mean, we had Unsolved Mysteries, the same template. You just get a weird thing, though Unsolved Mysteries is more about murder.
But for a generation, Leonard Nimoy investigated murders, Bigfoot, and aliens.
He was a less legit Neil deGrasse Tyson.
That's what that's referencing. It's not referencing Star Trek. Spock doesn't look at a fucking solar eclipse and say that shit. Well, and Leonard Nimoy did for In Search of.
The real In Search of reference would come with the Springfield Files, when he would just be sitting at a desk. Yeah.
That was much more obvious. And then he sings a song like his famous Bilbo Baggins.
But if you like The Simpsons, guaranteed you've never heard of In Search of. Uh-huh. You've never seen it.
Unless you're 50-ish.
Yeah. It's impossible.
But the he's not Batman line. I love so that good. Line.
Are we going to die, son?
Yeah. But at least we'll take a lot of innocent people with us.
Homer?
Yellow.
Homer, there's a man here who thinks he can help you.
Batman?
No, he's a scientist.
Batman's a scientist?
It's not Batman.
I think I have a way to stop the train. You need to find an anchor of some sort.
Think harder, Homer.
It's a visual reference, but it's so funny.
It's a very Looney Tunes move where he envisions Bart as an anchor.
It is. Where, like, the anchor speaks to him. No.
It's good.
And we get to see... We see the sea captain again, his fourth appearance in five episodes.
Yeah.
They call that an anchor.
They took him out of the last episode. I feel like they wanted him as part of that last
episode.
Wanted
him so bad, but they couldn't do it either. Mm-hmm. There's just nowhere to put him in Homer's heart attack.
Like, now separating Siamese twins is a very delicate procedure. It's like...
They should be covered in blood.
Yeah,
when that happens. Like,
unless that cauterized the wound, it was moving so fast.
The world needs laughter.
I love that.
So
fun,
it's
so much.
All of it's so fun. But I will say, as far as Simpsons shows go, that are legendary, Mr. Plow. is way better.
I like Mr. Plow more than way this funny. After rewatching it. Like it. Oh, and I wish the donut he lands in was Lard Lad mm-hmm. Donuts, but it didn't exist then. Like, yeah. It would be three more seasons before we meet Lard Lad. But
I think there was less time wasting in Mr. Plow. Although
there wasn't.
Yeah. There's, like, a, there's a bit of it, but
Mr. Plow is a complete story mm-hmm. and of one, and this is kind of like bounces around a bit. It is a lot looser, but it is such a cornucopia of jokes, yeah. including some of my favorite moments ever. But the animation, no offense to Rich Moore, I like the I give the animation edge to Mr. Plow mm-hmm. as well, and it is a more complete story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but I also think the highs I got to like. Mm-hmm. in this episode are higher than the Mr. Plow. I think Mr. Strub, Leonard Nimoy,
yeah,
like this has and the monorail song. Those are bigger than the Mr. Plow.
They
song.
Are, but it did like if you want to talk where the Simpsons broke their universe, it is this episode.
Yeah. They were worried. They were really worried mm-hmm. about it. I will take
he
points.
He teleports
off this.
Away. At
he does.
The end of it.
He beams
oh,
out.
Like,
I will take points off this episode for having the worst floating head sequence, where there are floating heads. I think
at the beginning,
not done in animation, but done with like video editing, where the final floating head, which is Homer, kind of hovers over. Right. Marge's shoulder for like 3-2 seconds too long. It's very awkward.
Because previously they were at least reanimated.
Yeah, they were like mm-hmm. actual pieces of animation. Yeah. These are just like superimposed, like cut from other
they were.
You know, bits of animation. Yeah, they're moving too smoothly.
But the ending is like the most cartoonish like ending they've ever had.
Yes.
With involving Springfield.
Dad, you're a hero.
Yes, son, I'm the best mono thingy guy there ever was.
Well. My work is done here.
What do you mean your work is done? You didn't do anything.
Didn't I?
And that was the only folly the people of Springfield ever embarked upon. Except for the popsicle stick skyscraper. And the 50-foot magnifying glass. And that escalator to nowhere.
Getting everyone.
So in order...
No!
In order, we see Rich Moore, Wes Archer, and David Silverman
wow,
going off the escalator to
yeah.
nowhere. The three main Simpsons animators who started with season one?
A great yeah. tribute to themselves, yeah. And that was... And Rich Moore would go on to Futurama and The Critic. Mm-hmm. And then
Wreck-It
Disney
Ralph.
Animation, yeah, Wreck-It Ralph.
Oh, and Zootopia.
And Zootopia,
yeah. Which,
oh my god.
In this time of
I'd watch
rampant,
then.
Validized racism,
yeah.
Please go watch Zootopia.
Relevant now more than ever.
Try everything.
It makes me cry every time I think of it now. Thanks, world.
As a kid, though, I think the escalator to nowhere was a step too far for me. I was like, wait a minute, why would the people are dying? Why would they do this? But I came to terms with it because things would get much wackier.
And Wes Archer now is
why can't
like,
we go back to the simple things like the tire fire?
Exactly. That was realistic.
I think Wes Archer is the supervising director, main director on mm-hmm. Rick and Morty.
Ooh.
Oh, wow. He yes. works on that now.
One
although,
of the it is my favorite show on television. Right
and he's always drawn with a beret in these episodes. I have no idea why.
I don't know what that's about.
A kicky beret.
I once saw this as the greatest episode ever. I think
I
would
Mr.
rank
Plow
Mr. Plow ahead of it. I would.
We talked more about this, I want to say.
Yes.
We did. But we had to.
This would lay the groundwork for musical moments in The Simpsons. Like, it's okay for us to all break into song without there being a reason for it.
I think the brothel song is much funnier.
Yeah. I love Who Needs the Quickie Mart. That's a great song, too.
So
I'd also say, that Mr. Plow didn't break the show. This broke the show. This crossed lines they'd never cross again. They couldn't uncross. And so
I just don't want to put that burden on it. Like it's so much.
But it's great. It was worth. I'd say it was worth it to break those rules for the jokes they had.
For those
so
3 years,
funny.
We'll have fun doing this show.
For better or worse, I think it was more for better that they broke the show. Season six is probably my favorite, and seven like together they're my favorite seasons, and they would not have happened.
Well,
without
we've all talked
this episode.
We've all said that we think there's a benefit from The Simpsons being a cartoon, not an analog for American life.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say Homer becoming an astronaut is the big breaker of the show.
Which
so
didn't, but
one.
But it didn't feel like one.
They worked real hard for it. That's the difference. They put so much effort into Homer joining NASA to make it make sense to some degree. But this one, they're just like, characters teleport away. And like, there's these things are
it's
supposed
not a
to.
Halloween episode, but you saw two people cut in half. Sorry, three people cut.
So three people dreams. Cut half. You saw
no, not the second one.
Oh yeah, that's true.
You have in canon that there's a giant magnifying glass in the downtown Springfield.
Yeah,
there's a lot of broken rules.
No
here.
Blame, fun.
I love it.
Great.
It was more of a jovial rule breaking than a mean spirited like senioritis rule breaking, where we saw that a lot much later.
Cape Fear is that.
Yes, exactly. But that was worth it, I think. Okay, so this is our longest episode ever, and I've been your host, Bob Mackey. You
but
can
at
find
least
me.
It was the monorail episode.
Yeah, of course it's appropriate. And you can find me on Twitter as Bob Servo. I also write for somethingawful.com and fandom.com, where I write about video games. If you like video games, you'll like my other podcast, Retronauts. It's a classic gaming podcast every Monday on Retronauts.com or usgamer.net, or search for Retronauts in your podcast device. Everybody else, where can we find you?
H-E-N-E-R-E-Y-G on Twitter is me, and that's where you'll find me. And hopefully by this point, I'm not only tweeting about my despair over the election, but you can also find my writing about video games at fandom.com as well. And I'm a constant on the Laser Time Podcast Network, which you'll hear me on, say, classic episodes of Talking Simpsons, which are only available on patreon.com/lasertime, along with a ton of other great extras I helped with, but it's really what pays the bills around here.
It's
for you
movie
guys.
Commentaries. We do a weekly show over there. You'll find me, hopefully, in rehab or some other place where I'm getting help.
Wait for Duffless.
Oh, I did want to say, I forgot to mention it, the clip, the last clip of Conan talking, that was from the Simpsons Writers
serious
Reunion,
serious
jibber jabber,
really
90 minutes long. It is perfect.
Please
it is
watch
him,
that.
Him, Mike Reese, Al Jean, Jay Kogan, and Jeff Martin all talking about the early years of the Simpsons.
Where can I find this amazing program?
YouTube.com.
But it's the only time they acknowledge that someone acknowledges that Tracy Ullman sued the Simpsons. Yes.
Ooh,
that is the basis
the
of that argument, and they've never mentioned it. No one knows.
Al Jean is afraid to mention.
They settle. Like Tracy Ullman makes money off of every Simpsons episode. Mm. Period. Like that's very weird to think about.
Yeah.
Someone who didn't want involvement with it at all.
Well, so is Jennifer Tilly. I mean, she
does too. Yes. She does too. The Family Guy voice who makes a ton of money off the Simpsons. But like that was the only place I heard someone mention it, and then they.
Oh, you mean the Widow Simon?
The Widow Simon.
That's true.
Hey, she took care of him. Anyway, that's how. Somebody take us out because I'm too drunk.
Tune in next week when we take a trip to Dove Gardens. Hurrah!
Infotainment.